I'd now like to hand over to our first speaker, which is Brendan Hurley. And Brendan is a retired medical practitioner with a keen interest in history and philosophy. He graduated from the medical school at the University of Cork and subsequently worked in NHS, general and psychiatric hospitals, prisons and general practice, as well as doing private medico-legal work. He holds a BA honours degree in history. So if I can ask you please to give a warm welcome to Brendan.
I hope you can all hear me in the background. I'm not used to speaking with a microphone, but if there was any difficulty, would somebody in the back would put their hand up and I'll notice it. Well, thank you for coming. And good afternoon, everyone, and Dr. Mary. By way of introduction and explanation to the title of this talk, two items of housekeeping. First, to follow this talk, it is not necessary to keep sense in mind. It is intended to emerge. The meaning and model of health are what will be discussed. The word health always in quotation marks. For as a former medical practitioner, I can honestly say that from when I began to up to now, the word health never crossed my mind. Nor can I recall any of my colleagues ever using the word to me or to others, and never to patients. And it seems that an error was made when I presumed only one medical person on this weekend's speaker list. So that is why it seemed that my talk should provide some counterweight to the philosophical substance that we follow. The second item is the two articles that were mentioned in the program as part of this talk. They would not appear. Although I can assure Fosio that both were read and digestible. They did not ultimately fit my direction and were put aside, except for social constructivism, of which more later. And as if by way of compensation, there was more Wittgenstein or Fox. Perhaps that will turn out to be my foreground. So, let us begin in a general manner by asking a number of questions about health. What, you may have already thought, could be the essential concept, the essential philosophical character?
I'm having difficulty hearing you, Brendan.
Right.
I think if you were to do this.
Okay. Come closer?
Yeah.
Better? Come closer? Ah, sorry. I can hear now. What, you may have already thought, could be the essential concept, the essential philosophical character, the big picture of humankind, and what significance could health have in it? Health quotation marks. What can we say philosophically about health? If you are not like me, how, you may have asked yourselves, can we examine the term as would Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle, and construct a clear, coherent, and consistent account of it? Should you be more like me, you might have asked, how can we talk about a word that is a substantive term, but has no substance? For me, I know what is health is an expression of knowing and saying that it is so. But if health is not a material object, this knowing is different to seeing or measuring. To see a material object is to know it exists, has measurements, colour, etc. To see a non-material object is to acquire its characteristics in another manner. Now, Socrates recommended a distinctive route. We are to consider and evaluate our many opinions take careful note of how we know and how we say it is so. The expression being congruous with the knowing of the absolute. Subsequently, Aristotle spelt it out in words, the valid argument, the sense of logic, carrying the propositions forward towards the conclusion, the manner, as per Socrates, being clear, coherent, and consistent, and the necessity of having a true premise in order to reach a true conclusion, thus logical philosophizing. A somewhat erratic logical philosopher, Ludwig Wittgenstein, once wrote, "This situation, I'm quoting, is in a way typical in the study of philosophy, and one sometimes has described it by saying that no philosophical problem can be solved until all philosophical problems are solved, which means that as long as they aren't all solved, every new difficulty renders all our previous results questionable. Every new problem which arises may put in question the position which our previous results are to occupy in the final picture." He added, again in the Blue Book, that the questions, what is length, what is meaning, what is the number one, etc., produce in us, he was referring to himself, as usual, a mental cramp. We, himself again, feel that we can't point to anything in reply to them, the questions, and yet ought to point to something. And went on to make the point, I quote, "This happens when we philosophize. For as soon as we revert to the standpoint of common sense, this general uncertainty disappears." And finally, "A substantive," I quote, "makes us look for a thing that corresponds to it." And surely, one would not accuse Wittgenstein of not trying hard enough. Does he not highlight an aspect of the philosophical method? That is, the language, the meaning of words, and other items as being problematic, somewhat less than ideal when used for academic purposes. And yet, while it is unlikely that he would deny the word health, quotation marks, any relevance, he would probably reply that there is no one exact usage of the word, that we can make up several usages which will more or less agree with the ways the word is actually used. As he wrote, I quote, "Our ordinary use of language conforms to this science and mathematics standard of exactness only in rare cases." So what, therefore, can the meaning of the word be such that it is used by philosophy without getting into an endless regress of definition, an anguished mental cramp of despair, when no object of a word is in mind, no ostensive definition? What could the meaning of health be? Now, health, quotation marks, the word itself, all six letters, is a substantive term. A substantive term expresses existence, says my OECD. The word health therefore expresses something to exist, a separate and independent existence, not merely inferential or implicit. The OECD definition is adequately vague for ordinary uses. It signifies soundness of body, literal or figurative, whatever body it might be, or perfectly suited for ordinary customary use. The modern word is believed to come from the Old English, that is pre-1150 AD word, and the even older Old High German word meaning home, both words look like their modern version. Thus, from whole to soundness of body, figurative uses of words, metaphorical transformations, to be examined later along with meaning. Now, one asks, what is the position, the significance of this health word within the essential concept of humankind? What is this essential concept of humankind? Well, my answer is that humankind is, in the evolution frame, an organism like any other, and therefore its essential nature is to survive, reproduce, and increase in numbers for as long as it may. As a species, humankind has a comparatively short history, but programmed to replicate itself, it has so far been whole or had soundness of body, been healthy enough to survive. And the human population since the 18th century has been doubling its global size more rapidly, and now at an even faster rate. As a species, we have a large interest in self-preservation, an inbuilt automatic disposition. This determined biology can be contrasted, or may be contrasted, to the growing cultural conviction that we ought to be whole, healthy, and happy. This conviction, this emerging social belief, this social construction, is not built into the organism or into the species. It is associated with modern urbanization and mass production of items for our service and entertainment, and has become, in humankind's cultural life, one of its socially constructed realities. Self-preservation of the organism firstly requires the ability to maintain itself at an adequate level of functioning. The organism's physiology has to function as the sum of its parts in a coherent and consistent manner, using self-regulating feedback mechanisms to coordinate the machinery of the organs. Maintenance of a strictly limited chemistry in the fluid parts of the body, vast neurological adjustments in response to internal and external stimuli, mechanisms that auto-defend the integrity of the body from foreign agents, the mechanism that repairs defects and damage caused to the skin, an organ, or the body as a whole, the replication and replacement of tissue cells in a methodical, mechanistic manner, day after day. The memory and learning functions of the brain, the blood to the extremities of the body, by the constant pumping action of the heart beating as it survives and multiplies and grows in numbers. The successive evolution and all manner of living species. All that is normal. All that is a model of health. So, is it likely that philosophy precedes the awesome success of that evolution through which the human life form came to be and persist? That after billions of years of spinning the dice for the chance emergence of earlier life forms and their trial by environment, that through a massive number of changes and combinations into almost always unsuccessful forms, yet once in a while, in a billion attempts, a more successful product survives the trial and proves this by ever-increasing numbers. Thus, the health of human physiology, a model of health, the X, Y, and Z that should mean health. If a person or a philosopher could see inside their skin, if that person could realize that all this is known with considerable clarity and is incorporated into a reality corresponding model that the present day medical practitioner can usefully use, if that person or philosopher could realize all that, is there still a need for concepts of health? Is there some deficiency to this sense of what lies inside the body and how it survives and surges forward in the world that needs to be rectified by socially constructed ideas? I think not. But it can be said, what about things that humans make? The language they use for things they suppose exist. Things such as health. Is this not just as real as philosophy, as physiology, just as valuable, just as philosophical? Well, all that can be said, but I am not convinced by culture as I am by physiology, as will be evident in the rest of this talk. But a little more on culture, the socially constructed reality, and what Jan Battista Vico had to say about what we humans make using our skills and brains. First, the big picture. Reality, large or one can say, is what remains the case independently of our saying or recognizing it is so. I have no sense of what that reality is, although an absolute reality, a Kantian noumenal reality, or such like, can be supposed. But we say what our reality is, small r. We make realities that we live in, and by which we carry out our daily activities. This, one might say, is our functioning reality, again a small r. It is our model or construct of how things are arranged, not independently of us, but by us, as Vico suggested, not by an extra natural agency, although that is no question, but by our own volition. Giambattista Vico's contribution to philosophy was his conclusion that human culture is what we can understand and reproduce because humankind made it. Vico's chief interest was history, and from what he claimed, I think it follows that what can be said of the human capacity in the past to construct items, solid or imagined, substantive or conceptual, prosaic or poetic, ranging from the seen to the supposed, and all in between, applies equally to the present. Vico distinguished between the limited capacity of human rationality to comprehend the material physical world and the much greater capacity to comprehend the sciences of human nature, of culture and society. Because God, said Vico, made the cosmos, man could not possibly reproduce it. But as man made culture, that he can. For Vico, a knowledge of social and cultural items of antiquity made it possible to reproduce them in his day. Vico also suggested that in our terms, the human brain and its mind has the capacity to see and then suppose what is out of reach. Vico points us towards the idea of human-made reactives against moral harm, literary, legal, social constructions that make sense to us over the centuries, and also social customs and practices, preferences and opinions that amount to, that construct a social reality, small r, sometimes described by sociologists as social constructivism, as in socially constructed or constructivist concepts of disease. These concepts assert that we medicalize our behavior that breaks our norms, medicalizes behavior that breaks our norms or fails in some way to accord with our values. We don't like people with bizarre behavior, so they have a mental illness, which is primarily a socially determined reality that is supported by medical authority. Now, this is not an unquestionable assertion, but it may suggest a sense of what socially constructed reality is. Of more interest, the following extract from an academic book published in 1998 says, in the 1990s, diseased bodies belonged to the socially dysfunctional and economically inadequate, the beautiful people at the cosmopolitan heart of the affluent society. Strive to have low heartbeat rates and toned muscles, abstain from degenerate poisons like tobacco, and fill their bodies with health foods, organically grown, humanely killed, and naturally processed without chemical additives. The macrobiotic muscle-bound revolution took over among the healthy, wealthy, chattering classes. From the mid-1980s, brand sales went up. Cigarettes were sold cheaply to the third world. Business in the gymnasium started to boom, and anyone who wanted to be a citizen preparing for the 21st century began jogging in Central Park. A constructivism is more than just that, but it incorporates it. It illustrates the capacity of humans to construct their realities, and Vico connects into this aspect of human behavior, that is, form and culture. Now, Vico, as discussed by Hayden White, who's an American philosopher of history, had something to say about how we have developed language to enlarge our thinking by means of an analogy between the dynamics of metaphorical transformations in language and the transformations of both consciousness and society. Now, what White intends us to understand by metaphorical transformations is the change from thinking and saying something in one way to another way of thinking and saying. From being awestruck about the seasons, for example, how they change, to fashioning a god in man's image, a metaphorical transformation, to account for it, or as White wrote, the primitives. Identification of thunder with anger, to identify the sound as made by or as a manifestation of a superhuman agency. Vico treats the human species as a thinking concept forming agency, that its mode of interpretation of what it thinks closely resembles what are now described as literary tropes that are metaphor, metonymy, synecdoche. More specifically, Vico considered the use of metaphor as the beginning of a dialectic of language development. What Vico and White are suggesting is a unity between our ordinary language and what have come to be elevated into literary tropes, which were and are part of ordinary language's methodology. For example, a sense of health as being whole. This tropic process assisting the expression of more complex and more subtle thinking, and by making a supposed item a substantive, something to believe in, we accept it as supposedly real, even true. For example, health. This speaking could be the mechanism for the development of socially accepted concepts like health, disease, madness, disability, death. This leads towards the idea that not only does language provide an expression of the neurological mind and its concept forming capacity, but that the neurological mind can learn to believe an expression of concept once it is out there in society. Expression being in the language and vocabulary of constructed ideas or concepts. This serves to emphasize health as a socially constructed form. Health in that constructed sense is a matter for conscious appraisal by humans who are disposed to social attachment and coping with the stresses and pleasures that come with it. Philosophy can now validly begin to examine this cultural aspect of health, which at this level can be described as the ability to adapt to these social stresses, to self-manage necessities, and maintain an adequate state of physical and mental well-being. This is an aspect of human health that may be described as voluntary, to be distinguished from the determined aspect of the organism's health, as previously discussed. Now here's a question. Is this voluntary aspect of human health capable of knowing the other determined aspect of human health, as discussed above? As per Vico, can a human mind know or believe that inside its body all is well? Can this question be answered? If it can, you must show me how you see inside the skin. If you say that you can, perhaps you can see inside the skin because you are an anatomist, not a philosopher. But I say, can you see now, or do you only see as it appears in a book? Or do you see what you have once seen but not see now, real time? As a philosopher, how can you see inside? See as an answer from evidence derived from within the body now. And come to think of it, is the body what can be seen on the outside? Or is the body what is supposed to be inside the skin? What is the sense of the body? In ordinary speech, one would say, I feel fine, no pain, all fingers and toes, things seem fine. And that would be sufficient for the average conversation. For the philosopher, that cannot be the case. What is the body? How can I know that its internal parts are functioning and are not due to cease functioning any second now? How can I know what is inside and how it is? Question mark. Clearly, one philosophical answer is not at all. So, I ask, how can the philosopher ask the question? What is the justification? What is wrong with the question that cannot be answered? And no appeal to science or informed opinion is allowed. There is a philosophy of body as bodily awareness, as discussed in the Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy, which I will not discuss. However, the article strongly suggests to me that the author and those philosophers he quoted have but a minimal knowledge of human physiology and are disposed to prefer the mindful consciousness of the body that emerges from cognitive forebrain activity and to ignore the automatic self-regulating aspect managed at the level of the hind and midbrain areas. The latter are about 95% or more of the working body. Awareness is the key word beyond them, and in fairness, it does accurately state that our bodily awareness is surprisingly weak. But even as the medical practitioner knows what is likely to lie under your skin, you, the patient, it is not the case that she has amazing visual capacity and is able to see what lies inside and how it is working in real time. Her knowledge is past tense. It presumes the knowledge fits the body that lies before her. Certainly an MRI scanner would help to visualize the internal parts in real time, and it can confirm that the various parts are where they are supposed to be, and that they have the appropriate shape, and that no change to them can be seen. But health, it cannot detect, nor can the doctor. Both in reality confirm the absence of detectable abnormality, which would suggest the absence of pathology and disease. But health, not detected. So what can the philosopher do to evaluate physical health? Very little, if at all, I would think. As outer space, the inner space of the body is not available for direct examination by the philosophical mind or the alien person. And therefore, its internal health, the answer to the question, is a matter of inference and supposition, guessing and supposing, which is not true knowledge, even if it is a social construction. Health is not something a human mind can see as an object, can measure or carry about as a bag of valuable items or useful instruments. There should be, arguably, more help in a doctor's medical bag and could ever be in the mind of a human organism. But who would look for health in the doctor's bag? Health is the state of being unaware that the inner workings of the body are in good order. To be aware of them is to have the conscious attention drawn to them. Pain is therefore not a state of health, nor pain and stiffness in the fingers, or feeling short of breath while at rest, or having short-term memory loss. These are items that come into our consciousness. We become aware of sensations that appear to be associated with certain locations and certain activities, but cannot see what's going on inside. Yet inside is the model of health. And having emphasized autonomous physiology, that of which the mind of that body is unaware as the essential component, and health consciousness as an add-on constructing meaning. Let us now return to what is the meaning of health, limited as it is to the surface of the body, barred from the inner reality, where what the body does and what the brain does. Now, what Wittgenstein concluded about language as the means of philosophical expression is briefly mentioned in the Tractatus and more specifically examined in his subsequent blue book some 15 years later. He asks, how can we believe that it is adequate, that his language, when so many of its terms and those used in philosophy are vague, imprecise, lacking in clarity? And while he did not use the term, it is reasonable to include our capacity to metaphorically transform, as discussed above. In essence, Wittgenstein is, I think, always at the first page of his blue book, where he asked, what is the meaning of a word? The question, what is length? What is meaning? What is the number one, etc., he wrote. We feel that we can't point to anything. We means him. We feel we can't point to anything in reply to them, the questions, and yet ought to point to something. We are up against one of the great sources of philosophical bewilderment. A substantive makes us look for a thing that corresponds to it. A significant word is substantive, a word like health, that signifies something to exist, that it has meaning. Does the word exist philosophically? His beetle in a box illustration takes a beetle as the word and puts it beyond general sight and measurement. This using of a material object as a substantive, it is an object to one person and a substantive to everyone else because they cannot see it. Beetle is also a substitute for the sensation of pain. And he is, I think, drawing an analogy between the substantive sensation of pain and the substantive beat in a box. The point of this exercise is to draw a comparison between saying, I have a beetle in my box, and I have a pain in my head. Between, I have a beetle, and I have a pain. The grammar of the words is the same, but the sense of the word have is different. I could see your beetle, but I could never see your pain. Likewise for health, it could replace the beetle. Your meaning of the word health could be in the box. It is now something in the box. The box is open to you, but closed to your neighbours. Today, unlike last year when Janet described the thought experiment, the beetle is a meaning of the word health. Now we have already agreed, have we not, that knowing our bodies philosophically is not possible. The knowing does not go under what is hurt us, but that we can philosophically examine whatever social constructions, meanings of health that we wish to conjure. Returning to Wittgenstein, he said, suppose that everyone had a box with something in it which we call a beetle. The we refers to everyone. No one can ever see, can ever look in anyone else's box, and everyone says he knows what a beetle is only by looking at his beetle. Here, it would be quite possible for everyone to have something different in his box. One might even imagine such a thing constantly changing. In other words, in Wittgenstein's scenario, what is in each person's box is their version of a beetle, and theirs alone. It is the beetle only that person can know. And although each person has what is generally called beetle, in each box, each beetle is individually known only by one person. What appears to be a material object is treated by Wittgenstein as a substantive, because only one beetle is known by one person. Just as one sensation of pain is sensed by one person, even though everyone is familiar with the word pain. Wittgenstein was, I believe, drawing attention to the difficulty of knowing what is in someone's mind when expressed in words and grammar, as if that mental object was a material object. When one says, I have this mental object, this is a misapplication of the phrase, I have something. When the something is a material object that is available for all to see. The language allows such a use, but he doubts that it really works in philosophy. And to add to the difficulty, he is doing this philosophy argument by means of ordinary language in order to demonstrate how difficult it is to do philosophy in ordinary language. Wittgenstein is comparing how we know a material object, as in, I know my beetle, and how we know a sensation in non-material substantive, as in, I know my pain. And he is concerned with how we could accurately, as philosophers, communicate the sense of the sensation, how it could be expressed by one philosopher to another. He is referring only to philosophical use of language, not to ordinary conversation. In other words, as he wrote, in general, we don't use language according to strict rules. It hasn't been taught us by means of strict rules either. We, he means himself, in our discussions, on the other hand, constantly compare language with a calculus proceeding according to exact rules. For Wittgenstein, it is a fundamental mistake to express the awareness of one has of what one calls a discomfort or pain as having a pain. because one must assume that what one refers to as the pain is also what other people equally signify. But that is not a known, a philosophically known. Likewise, for what we mean by our health in the box, we cannot see inside your box. But should we all agree in advance that X, Y, and Z are in the boxes, now we have a socially constructed meaning we can know, and philosophers can tackle. Otherwise, there is no knowing, no private access to our bodies as philosophers, no shared access to our health meanings. To sum up, I have indicated our limited capacity for conceptual insight into vague substantives, as well as the use of language to develop concepts and constructions to create realities for us. I have, on the other hand, discussed how the body is a model of health, but that reality, we are excluded from knowing. But because no sense, meaning, or model of health can be known to exist, there is always that mental cramp in asking the question. There is the limit of physiology as we are made in its image, and our unlimited capacity to form concepts, social realities, concepts of health. To paraphrase Vico, we make realities smaller. We make social realities. In contrast, physiology makes us. It is as essential to humans as language is to philosophy. This is my sense of health, meaning, and model. Physiology is the fundamental concept. There is, on the other hand, the public reality, which is concerned with autonomy and well-being, to be whole, healthy, and happy. To conclude, we may be healthy, but cannot know it, or know what the word means, but we can make it up. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Brendan. Would you like me to chair the questions for you?
Yeah,
hoping lots of questions.
Oh dear. Please,
right.
Dear.
So if you can just take a pad of paper so I can write them. Just put their hands up. So,
ready? Okay.
Right. Can we start with Alan, please?
Thank you. I want to make a rather basic preliminary suggestion that the concept of health is what logicians tend to call a defeasible concept. Forsley put up a sentence at the beginning, we all want to be healthy and not unhealthy. And because she felt it appropriate to put that bit in, it's obviously a large part of what we're talking about. Namely, that to say somebody is healthy is to say that they're free of all the things that might be wrong with them. This is relevant or related to your suggestion that we are looking for a substantive. You don't need one substantive thing that can say a meaning. The meaning of a word is its use. And the use of a negative concept, a defeasible concept like that, is to evoke that kind of, or lead on to that kind of discussion about what might be wrong with them or the range of things that could defeat the concept. And so it's a useful concept. We all use the term every now and then, even if it doesn't appear in a lot of dictionaries. And I hope we will be able to concentrate on, I think a lot of what was underlying the talk is about what might be wrong. And happily, the name of the next talk is illness have a meaning? And I think that's more proper to concentrate on than wonder if there's a substantive thing that is health, because I don't think there is.
I'm sure you're right. I think that's what I've been saying all along.
Yeah.
But I think I am trying to express an opinion as to what is the positive interpretation of the word health. I find the negative, defeasible interpretation of the word to be inadequate. And I think in philosophy, I think the word, the explanation, the interpretation, the definition of a word has to be pretty solid once you're going to leap off it. And so I perfectly accept what you say. And we, the rest of the weekend, I am quite sure, will be spent by speakers who will talk very sensibly about what is health and what is disease, and all these very acceptable, as I suggested, socially constructed ideas. The reality is a bit smaller. And now I think that should, is that fair?
Okay, so can we have Frank, please?
When you were talking...
Can you stand up, Frank, because I can't really hear you at the front, sorry.
When you were talking about what a human being is, what human nature is, you said human beings are organisms. And like many other organisms, contained a whole lot of internal mechanisms that tended to preserve health. Not trying to go into lots of definitions of health at the moment.
Of course.
And therefore, it would seem that one of the things that doctors do is to repair those more organisms when they break down. However, one of the other things, that one of the other mechanisms within the human and a lot of other organisms, is one that puts a limit on the extent to which they live. To what extent, therefore, do you think doctors ought to be respecting that limit? So they seem to spend an awful lot of time trying to prolong our health, our existence, beyond that limit which is inbuilt into the human organism.
Well, yes, I think that will probably be addressed later on, but I can make just probably about two comments. The first is the physiological aspect, as it were, the natural tendency to fail, which is built in. There is a word for this. I remember coming across it many years ago in one of the medical comics, and it seemed to make a lot of sense at the time, but I simply cannot remember. But that is one aspect, and that certainly is an aspect. Now, whether we is social, we must include both doctors and society. So I think actually a lot of the time in these sort of questions, and you could also include terminations, euthanasia, and other such situations with the prolongation of life, and it's a social question as far as I am concerned, doctors will always happily play with patients. I speak for myself, I don't speak for any other medical practitioner. We'll happily do what we can, because that's what we like to do. But whether we ought to do it, whether it's appropriate to do it, whether in the long run it's a good idea, you want me to express an opinion?
Yes.
I think it's a really bad idea. Not from a medical point of view, from my point of view. Is that fair?
Yes. A lot of ethical conversation one could have around this point.
Of course. Not one of my strong points, ethics.
Well, I'm afraid we've run out of time for more questions, but I know a few hands up. There will be a panel question and answer time at the end of today before we have dinner, so plenty of chance to put more questions to Brendan. So can we give Brendan a big...